Today, from here, where, as risks and uncertainty haunts the markets. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, this is our weekly market update, and we start in the US, across to Europe and Asia and in Australia. And we also look at commodities and crypto as I get my ideas straight for the next leg of the year. In essence, AI has driven markets hard, especially in the US, but market breadth is narrow and risks remain elevated. Shares in New York ended low on Friday, reversing modest opening gains after the latest inflation data showed that the disinflation narrative was indeed intact, widening ever so slightly the door to a pivot to rate cuts. So an early rally, though, fizzled as investors digested the inline inflation data and weighed political uncertainty after the US presidential debate, where the shaky performance from US President Joe Biden against Donald Trump just ratcheted November's US election uncertainty up substantially. Data showed that US monthly inflation was actually unchanged in May, an encouraging development after strong price increases earlier in the year, which had raised doubts over the effectiveness of the Fed's monetary policy. The Commerce Department report also showed consumer spending rose marginally last month, fueling optimism that the US central bank could perhaps engineer a much-desired soft landing for the economy. The May core PCE price index actually rose by 0.08% month over month, and the year-over-year rate declined to 2.57%. Core services, excluding housing, increased 0.1%, and market-based core PCE increased 0.15%. Personal spending and income increased by 0.2% and 0.5% respectively in May, and the savings rate edged up to 3.9%. This lifted expectations of a Fed rate cut this year just a little, with the probability of a rate cut in September hovering between 60 and 70%. San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly acknowledged the cooling inflation and noted that it was good news that policy is working. And Fed Governor Michelle Bowman said the central bank could follow its own path as its inflation goal has yet to be reached. The yield on the 10-year note in the US was 1.13% higher to 4.392, while the 2-year was up 0.62% to 4.749. The DXY was at 105.85, still strong against the basket, while the VIX was at a very low 12.44. There was a wave of selling of the Magnificent Seven on Friday, with a 3% tumble in Meta, and Amazon, Alphabet, Apple, and Microsoft each closed more than 1% lower, although Tesla edged 0.2% higher. Nvidia dropped 0.4%. President and CEO Jensen Huang recently sold a significant number of company shares, amounting to over $29 million worth. The transactions were executed over 2 days, with prices ranging from $122.88 to $128.05 per share and sold under a pre-arranged trading plan. An investment activity also saw Cathie Wood's ARK ETFs selling a substantial number of Nvidia shares, indicating strategic adjustments to its portfolio. Overall, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.12% to 39,118. The S&P 500 lost 0.41% to 5,460. And the Nasdaq Composite dropped 0.76% to 17,732. The S&P 500 and the Nasdaq indices registered quarterly gains of 3.9% and 8.3% respectively, but the Dow dropped 1.7%, highlighting the divergence between the more tech-heavy indices and the rest of the market. In company news, Nike shares plunged 20% after it forecast that sales would slide in the mid-single digits this fiscal year, and investors were expecting an increase. It was its steepest one-day fall in over 2 decades following that gloomy forecast. The focus of traders and investors now will switch to next week's US labor market reports, the May job openings, weekly jobless claims, and June's unemployment data. And the US markets also, of course, will be closed on Thursday for Independence Day. JP Morgan strategists released their mid-year outlook, indicating a challenging environment for the continuation of recent stock market trends, which have seen significant gains driven by a small number of large cap stocks. The brokerage firm noted that the largest 20 US stocks had surged 27% year to date, and those along with high quality stocks have markedly outperformed broader indices such as the S&P 500 Equal Weight and the Russell 2000. The bank's report highlighted that the momentum in stock prices, particularly among the largest companies, has reached extreme levels, with these stocks accounting for 65% of the S&P 500 gains over the past year and 75% year to date. JP Morgan's price target for the S&P 500 is still 4,200, which signals a 23% downside risk from current levels. And JP Morgan expressed skepticism about the ability of those stocks to sustain their earnings growth rates into the second half of the year, a factor crucial for maintaining their price momentum. The market's rebound in the fourth quarter of 2023 was based on the expectation that the Federal Reserve would cut rates significantly, but this has been adjusted since to only about two cuts for the year, given the persistence of inflation. And 2024 equity market performance has been predominantly driven by companies and sectors associated with AI. As of mid-June, the information technology and communications services sectors surged over 20%. And in contrast, the other nine sectors have underperformed relative to the broader S&P 500 index. According to Wells Fargo strategies, this tech-driven rally is partly fueled by optimism over AI's future potential. However, earnings have also been a significant factor, with the communications service and information technology sectors growing 44 and 25% respectively year over year in the first quarter. While valuations have expanded, fundamentals are at least partially supporting the rise in prices, the analyst wrote in the note. And Wells Fargo noted that upcoming events, such as the November election and potential delays in disinflation, may cause episodes of market volatility in the months ahead. It's worth reflecting again on the fact that 30% of the S&P 500's returns this year have come from Nvidia alone. It was now the most expensive stock on the most expensive market in the world. And the Magnificent Seven accounts for 71% of the S&P 500 index return to date. Talk about a tightrope. The big story in commodities has been cocoa, which skyrocketed almost 85% due to shortages, which is already its second biggest annual leap of all time, although certainly that's not good news for chocoholics. And gold hit a record high of just shy of 2,450 an ounce last month, but it's been drifting since then and was last at 2,336.95 in the futures market. Silver prices have struggled due to the strong US dollar and speculative traders reducing their net long positions in the futures market. At the moment, speculative accounts hold net long positions of nearly 260 million ounces of silver, which is high by historical standards. If the US dollar remains strong and net positions continue to be reduced, silver prices could drop further to around $27.50 an ounce or even 26.1 an ounce in the near term, according to UBS. Considering silver's recent price volatility of over 30%, such declines are not uncommon. For silver prices to rise, both US interest rates and the US dollar would need to fall in the second half of the year, they said. Elsewhere, crude oil prices rose on Friday. That was their third consecutive winning week, as fears of supply disruptions in Russia and the Middle East largely offset concerns over slowing demand. The US crude futures WTI was last at $81.50 a barrel, while the Brent contract was at $86.41. In fact, Brent and WTI futures gained nearly 2% in this week and have gained more than 6% in June. Fears of a wider war between Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah kept markets on edge over disruptions in crude supplies, while attacks by Ukraine on major Russian fuel refineries also pointed to potential disruptions in oil supplies from Moscow. Geopolitical conflicts saw traders attach a higher risk premium to oil prices, This overshadowed a jump in US crude oil stocks, which ramped up concerns that US fuel demand was slowing, especially as the country grapples with sticky inflation and high interest rates. Now, over in Europe, shares gave up early gains to close lower on Friday as a drop in shares of beauty giant L'Oreal weighed, while the benchmark index clocked weekly, monthly, and quarterly declines on French political uncertainties. The pan-European Stock 600 closed 0.2% lower, extending losses to the fourth straight session, and recorded its first quarterly loss in three, along with a monthly and weekly decline. That's amid political uncertainties in France following President Emmanuel Macron's call for a snap election earlier in the month. The bruising sell-off in the French markets was revived on Friday as traders ditched assets ahead of Sunday's elections. French bond risk has exploded to its highest level since the euro crisis after the French president's drubbing by the far right in EU elections this month. And that drove him to call that snap parliamentary election on Sunday, which will likely confirm the French preference for Marine Le Pen's party. The yield on 10-year French government notes at one point rose to the highest since November, widening the spread over safer German securities to 86 basis points, the most since 2012. And the benchmark CAC 40 stock index, meanwhile, fell to its lowest since January. French inflation also grew 2.1% on an annual basis in June. That's a fall from 2.3% in the previous week, while Spanish inflation climbed to 3.4%. That's a drop from 3.6%. The DAX in Germany was up 0.13% to 18,253, while the 10-year German bond was at 2.4930. Now in the UK, it's election day on July the 4th, and there aren't expected to be as many market fireworks here, despite it being almost certain that will be the first change of government in 14 years, because unlike in France and the US, the two main candidates to lead the UK are both, well, really, frankly, fairly centralist. There is not much doubt about a Tory washout. This being said, there is a problem that the FT summarised very well in just one sentence. Labour and the Conservatives are on course to register their lowest combined vote share in a century, according to pre-election polls. The latter could leave the country with a lot of political uncertainties moving forward. Britain has vast fiscal challenges that neither Labour nor the Conservatives have clarified in how they will solve them, according to the Institute for Fiscal Studies think tank. Economic growth is tepid. Public debt to GDP has risen to a 63-year high, and taxation as a share of national income is approaching its highest since 1949. So if voters expect better public services without tax hikes, and investors want government borrowing to stabilise, Starmer could find it tough to keep both sets of stakeholders on side. The FTSE was at 8,164 as the latest growth figures confirmed a zero move in April, after Britain's economy grew 0.7% in the first 3 months of this year compared with the previous quarter and came in just above an estimate of 0.6% growth. The pound was at 1.2644 against the US dollar. Asian stocks rose on Friday and made strong gains in June amid some hopes that the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates this year amid a cooling US economy. But Chinese shares largely lagged their regional peers this month as concerns over a potential trade war with the West and doubts over an economic recovery in the country sparked deep losses in local markets. Japan's yen has bowed to a 38-year low against the dollar in currency markets, with the US dollar Japan yen consolidating gains above the 160 level. The only thing that prevents the yen from a further fall is the direct intervention risk. The Bank of Japan keeps delaying its intervention plans. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve delays its rate cutting plans. The Bank of Japan is expected, in fact, it's obliged to give a clearer roadmap regarding how it will reduce its bond purchases at its July meeting. They might well be obliged to hike rates, given that the pressure on the yen won't ease until concrete steps are taken on the policy front. Everyone knows that the direct foreign exchange intervention will be nothing more than just another morphine injection. It won't give the yen more than just temporary relief. Both Japan's Nikkei 225 and the TOPIX rose about 0.8%, with the latter hitting a three-month high after mixed consumer price inflation data from Tokyo. While headline CPI data was increasing, underlying inflation remained weak and close to lows last seen in late 2022. Tokyo inflation usually acts as a bellwether for countrywide inflation, with Friday's reading showed only minimal signs of increasing. The Nikkei and TOPIX added 3.2% and 0.6% in June, respectively, as they recovered from a middling performance through most of the second quarter. Broader Asian markets advanced, with South Korea's KOSPI up 0.59%, and it's up 6% in June, buoyed chiefly by flows into local chip-making stocks amid growing hype over AI. Memory chip makers SK Hynix and Samsung Electronics were the main beneficiaries of that trade. India's Nifty 50 index was up nearly 7% in June, having clocked a series of record highs through the month amid persistent confidence in India's economy. Local stocks also largely shrugged off the unexpected results of the 2024 general election that saw the incumbent BJP party win a smaller majority. The index was last at 24,009. But China's Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indices rose about 0.8% on Friday, but were both set to lose around 3% in June. And Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index added 0.6% and was trading up just 1% over June. So Chinese markets have lagged their regional peers this month as concerns over a potential trade war with the West saw sentiment sour towards China. Beijing flagged the possibility of retaliatory measures over European tariffs on Chinese electrical vehicle imports, and optimism over stimulus measures from Beijing was also cooling through June amid a series of mixed economic readings from the country. Chinese property stocks continue to fall and have fallen for the ninth quarter in a row. In Australia, the Australian dollar was among rare major currencies that challenged the dollar's strength after the Australian inflation data hit 4% in May, leaving the RBA doves with no more energy to fly. The Australian share market notched a modest 0.1% gain on Friday to finish the financial year up 7.8%. The ASX 200 return for last year was 9.7%, so it wasn't beaten. The best performing sector in the ASX's 11 sectors in this financial year was technology, with a 28% gain, while the worst sector was energy, down 7.4%, weighed down by a poor 12-month performance from sector heavyweight Woodside. Over a week dominated by rising bets on an interest rate increase from the Reserve Bank of Australia, the benchmark share index lost 0.3% to finish at 7,767.50. The mining sector bore the brunt of the selling on Friday to finish the day down 1%. Lithium miners extended their heavy losses this year, with Pilbara Minerals falling 5.8% to $3.07, and Mineral Resources slipping 3.6% to $53.92. Friday's 0.1% gain was driven by interest rate-sensitive bank and tech stocks, which both edged higher ahead of US inflation data, which was due out, and the Aussie dollar lost 0.4% over the trading day to buy 66.7 US cents at the closing bell. In corporate news, Treasurer Jim Chalmers announced that ANZ's proposal to buy Suncorp Bank could proceed, with the latter to retain its insurance operations based in Queensland on a standalone basis. The insurer said it will return the majority of the proceeds from the bank sale to shareholders by the first quarter of 2025, assuming other regulatory approvals. ANZ will acquire Suncorp's banking business after Treasurer Jim Chalmers gave the $4.9 billion deal a green light, saying it was in the national interest to approve it. But the government will prevent ANZ from closing any regional branches anywhere in the country for 3 years in exchange for it allowing the company to buy the Queensland headquartered bank. The bank will also have to ensure that it has no net job losses for the same period under conditions imposed by Dr. Chalmers. ANZ Chief Executive Shane Elliott said the approval showed that arguments that we made about why this is in the national interest to have a more efficient competitor must have landed and would help ANZ compete with bigger rivals. The government also wants ANZ to make every effort to join Australia Post Bank at Post Service alongside the other major banks, which allows customers to do basic banking at the post office. Dr. Chalmers said the conditions, on top of others already imposed by Queensland, ensured the deal was in the national interest. We recognise the way the banking sector is changing, Dr. Chalmers said. This is an on-balance call, but I think it is the right one because it recognises all of the issues in play here and imposes some pretty strict enforceable conditions at the same time. Suncorp shares advanced 3.6% to a post-GFC high of $17.41, and ANZ shares slipped 0.2% to $28.24. The approval for ANZ to take out one of the regional banks also comes as the government has launched an inquiry into the regulation of small banks. It's ordered the Council of Financial Regulators and the ACCC this month to review challenges faced by multi-tier banks that have been squeezed by growing capital and regulatory costs. Analysts expect the deal to lift ANZ's shares by about 2% over the next 3 to 6 years, but says that the integration task will be significant. ProMedicus, the healthcare software developer, is actually the best performing stock on the ASX 200 this financial year, narrowly beating San Francisco headquartered family monitoring app Life360. There was less than a 1% difference between the two investor favourites earlier this week. That was until a 2.5% gain on Friday pushed ProMedicus ahead, tallying a 118.7% return in the 12 months to the end of June. That compared to a 115% return from Life360, which was well ahead of the third best performing stock, gold miner Red 5, at 89.5%. Another miner, West African Resources, and current tech takeover target Altium rounded out the five best performing stocks with returns of 86 and 84% respectively. And finally, in crypto, Bitcoin took a massive hit after reaching the 71,000 threshold, losing 40% of its value and plummeted below 60,000 US at one stage, where it did get some support. It was last at 61,008. For now, there is no distinctive fuel for the asset, and it's unlikely to appear in the foreseeable future unless, well, maybe, the Ethereum ETF pushes the market forward as a whole. So standing back, the second half, I think, is going to be a very interesting time. Some of the momentum from the AI stocks continues, I think, to push lower, and more broadly, the narrow path is getting to turn into a tightrope. Higher for longer will hold the markets back, and uncertainty politically and economically looks to be coming to the fore. Therefore, JP Morgan's thoughts about lower prices ahead could well be right. Uncertainty is peaking, so watch and wait, and remember, September and October tends to be the worst months of the year. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.